much. Let's get a sense of what it means from our BBC Economics and Business Editor, John Campbell, who is in Brussels this morning. John, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. So this lock that a future Northern Ireland Assembly could have, it's gone. Why?
Yeah, so the original plan in the Boris Johnson proposal from a couple of weeks ago now was that if there were any special arrangements for Northern Ireland, they would first of all have to be approved by Stormont for them to come into force, and then every 4 years Stormont would have to effectively reissue that approval. So you would have this rolling four-year cycle of deciding whether or not we were going to continue to align with the EU or we would align with the rest of the United Kingdom. This plan did not go down very well. Didn't go down well here in Brussels or in Dublin. Didn't go down well among the Northern Ireland business community either, because they said, hold on a minute. So we're going to have this completely unstable situation where it's going to basically turn off the tap for investment, because people coming here won't know what sort of investment environment they're going to be in, and that will be the kind of constant kind of disruption every 4 years potentially. So there's been a bit of a rethink on that, according to Adam Fleming, my colleague in Brussels here. And he's saying that the UK have dropped the notion that there would have to be upfront approval at Stormont for this arrangement to come into force. Now, it's not clear to me if this idea of rolling approval after it comes into force has also been dropped. That is not clear yet. There was also an interesting line over the weekend from a well-informed analyst here who said what the Irish government have been talking about, or Irish negotiators have been talking about, is the idea that the consent for Stormont has to be a one-off political event, rather than having this constant instability. So you basically, there would be a one-time decision taken, and then after that, Stormont would say, right, we're going to continue aligning.
What would that be, a referendum?
Well, that is potentially something which would be on the cards. And this, if you remember when Mark Carruthers was interviewing the Secretary of State, Julian Smith, on The View last week, Julian Smith did not rule out the notion that there could be a Northern Ireland-only referendum, in which you could have a situation where we're told, here is the special arrangements for Northern Ireland, do you want these or do you not? And so that would get round, you know, the issue that Ben was talking about there, whether, you know, who has the veto? Is it a nationalist veto or a unionist veto? Well, you could possibly just short-circuit all of that by saying, let's not worry about vetoes at Stormont. Let's just put it out to a referendum. Now, there's no sense that is the proposal that's on the table at the moment, but it may be one option if you're looking to get out of that situation where one side or the other has the veto at Stormont. Now, I think as any of this stuff moves, it becomes more and more difficult for the DUP, because the DUP, certainly their view was that they had taken a big risk by acknowledging that there could be effectively an Irish Sea border in terms of regulation. So that would mean new checks on products coming in here from Great Britain. But they said the comfort blanket there was that there would be effectively be a unionist veto. But clearly, where the negotiations are now, that idea of a unionist veto appears to be watered down.
But if the unionist veto has been watered down, then how can the DUP sell this to their base, John? What if they were saying that the protection was, don't worry about this so-called border down the Irish Sea, don't worry, because it will only happen if they allow it to happen. If they don't have that lock now, how can Boris Johnson get this through them?
Well, I suppose you could go back to the basic principles of saying it's not about, you know, unionist locks or nationalist locks. It's about a mechanism for demonstrating that there is democratic approval for such an arrangement. So if you were to be in a position where you had that referendum idea, for example, you could say, well, there is clear, direct democratic approval for this mechanism. Now, but I think you're right that it still makes it very difficult for the DUP if it is felt that this is where the situation is going. And of course, the other notion here is, to what extent does Boris Johnson need the DUP? Because we know currently that the way the numbers have worked, with all those Conservatives being expelled effectively, the DUP can't give the Prime Minister a majority. So does he start to think about constructing a majority for a deal in a different way, generally bringing across more Labour people? I suppose that is where his thinking could land. But like I say, at the moment, we don't know precisely what is being proposed on this idea for democratic consent in Northern Ireland, other than this idea of an upfront veto seems to have gone by the wayside.
John Campbell, thank you very much indeed. Jim Alistair from the TUV with us this morning. Your reaction to this, Jim? The Stormont lock seems to have gone.
Well, I think it's
becoming clearer that the DUP foolishly was sucked into agreeing a regulatory border in the Irish Sea with the promise of this Stormont Loch or unionist veto. And once they were sucked in, of course, they're now to be shafted on that, which is something I warned about at the time. I think the response of the DUP needs to be emphatic. If there has been bad faith in inducing them to accept a regulatory border, then they need to disavow that and declare opposition to such a regulatory border, because before we're finished here, it'll not just be a regulatory border, it'll be a customs border. So I think that...
Well, this is scare tactics from you, isn't there? There's no suggestion of a customs border.
Well, sorry, there is. We are told that one of the stories over the weekend is that whereas Northern Ireland, and theoretically, will live within the UK customs union, that it will also have duality and operate under the EU customs union, and customs will be collected on goods coming into Northern Ireland, EU tariffs. Well, where would that happen but at the Irish seaports? So that is the second border for the Irish Sea. So I think there is room to fear that having been suckered into a goods border, they now could be suckered into a customs border, which of course treats Northern Ireland as a place apart, and aligns us economically with the Irish Republic, of which we are not a part, and it over time totally orientates us away from our biggest market, from our UK connections, and effectively sets about the dismantling of the union. I think it's pretty clear what's afoot.
You know the DUP as well as most people do. They are not going to tolerate something happening to Northern Ireland without them having a very influential role in it. And they've got a close relationship with Boris Johnson.
Well, are they, for example, about to renew their confidence and supply with Boris Johnson in circumstances where he may just have shafted them on the consent issue, in circumstances where he may be about to impose a customs border in the IEC? You know, I think the DUP needs to waken up here. They need to recognise that they, perhaps good faith on their part, but bad faith on the part of the government, they were suckered in to agreeing to a regulatory border in the IEC, and they now need to disavow that and step back from it. If they're going to show any teeth, now's the time to do it.
So what do you think the DUP should now be doing rather than disavowing things? Those are words. They're maybe trying to be more mature and wait until they see the actual detail of this proposal and then react.
Well, I think all of this discussion is tentative because none of us have seen the detail. But going on the premise of what you laid out for this debate, namely what the BBC correspondent in Brussels is saying about the veto, and namely the speculation over the customs border, I think it's legitimate to talk within those confines, recognising that they are tentative confines, and say if that is what's happening, if the unionist veto is to go, if there is to be some form of customs border as well as a goods border, then the DUP, as the predominant party in unionism, needs to stand up and not allow the union to be betrayed, because that would be a betrayal of the union if the union is unpicked in that way, so that we are put into captivity in the EU and within the orbit of the Irish Republic's economy and removed a century from the orbit of our own economy in the United Kingdom. That is very serious stuff.
Tom Kelly led the Remain campaign here. Morning to you, Tom.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning. So, the Stormont veto, it was very unlikely that that was going to work, many people would argue, given the fact the reality is we don't even have an assembly, for goodness sake. And then trying to find some type of way through both communities agreeing over this hugely divisive issue, namely Brexit. Like, who thought it was going to work in the first place? But it seems to be it's gone, Tom.
Well, I think they were looking for something which would give what John Campbell described earlier in your programme, which was democratic accountability for whatever decision is made. and therefore the idea was to kick it back to Stormont. But of course that would never work, apart from the fact that Stormont isn't sitting, because we have the petition of concern. But the use of the word veto should never have come into this debate in the first place, not a unionist veto, not a nationalist veto, because the bottom line is it's the consent of the people of Northern Ireland. There's 1.9 million nearly people here. There are over 250,000 people who vote for the DUP. We've got to put things into some context here. But I also think that we're all jumping ahead. There's a huge distance to go before anyone gets a deal here. The optics were good last week between the two prime ministers, and they seem to have good synergy. And that was about it. You know, in terms of what the detail is, the detail that's emerged so far seems extremely, extremely complicated to work out. If I was a DUP, I would be slightly worried because Rees-Mogg has turned around and said, let's trust Boris in the negotiations.
But the Assembly veto, Tom, was not some type of sideline fact. This was being sold as a reassurance to unionists. Don't worry about what's happening with this so-called border down the Irish Sea. Don't worry about it because the Assembly and therefore unionism will be able to protect what they think are the best interests of Northern Ireland, as will the nationalist community. If that's gone, what is protecting people here?
Well, I mean, again, it goes back to, I don't think that the British government got its mind around that by kicking this back to the Assembly for some kind of approval. They weren't thinking about the petition of concern and how that might be used. In reality, the petition of concern should not be used on economic matters at all. And, you know, in that situation, the Assembly would have given approval to continue in the single market or the customs union. And that's the reality, because that's democratic. But I think the reality is people started to use the language about unionists having a veto, which was absolutely impossible. It was never going to travel. And the other thing that wasn't going to travel, and the business community spelled this out pretty clearly, you can't live in a bubble where every 4 years we debate whether we should be in Europe or out of Europe. What business anywhere would make any investment plans that within 2 years the parties are all back into campaigning for and against? This is a divisive place enough without throwing that grenade back into the mix.
Do you think a referendum is the way through this?
Well,
a referendum on Boris Johnson's proposed deal?
I think that there is a strong argument that whatever deal he puts to Europe, that he should probably go back to the people to get endorsement for that, because at least that takes it further than where Theresa May had it. And I think that it's really important that the people do get the final decision on what it is.
But my question was around a referendum here in Northern Ireland around these new circumstances within the proposal.
What I share with Jim Mallister is a distrust of British government. I would fully expect that if the Boris Field can get off a hook, yes, a referendum bespoke to Northern Ireland is highly likely.
But would you support it?
Oh, yes.
But that's majority rule.
That's democracy. That's what they keep telling us.
Well, the consent of both communities gone as long as it suits your agenda. If we have a majority rule referendum on this, why not just have clear majority rule for every issue at Stormont? And look where that brings us.
When you go out to vote, we have preferential elections in Northern Ireland. We change our votes on a regular basis. This is not about unionism or nationalism. This is about the economic prosperity of Northern Ireland. And quite frankly,
everything in Northern Ireland is about unionism and nationalism, John, Tom, is it not?
Well, maybe on the Nolan Show, but not in the rest of Northern Ireland. But the reality is, this is about the economic prosperity of Northern Ireland. And if we get economic prosperity, we get stability. And if we get stability, the union is more than safe. And that's what people need to make. If you're making people stakeholders in the community, if you want to make it more peaceful, if you want to make it stable, you want to make it economic prosperous, then you actually do things which keeps the economy running to the best that it can. And it seems to me that if having access to East West and having access to the European Union does that, then that's what we should be going for.
Here's John in Hollywood. Morning, John.
Morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, John.
No, I just wanted to make a point about some of the inflammatory language that has been used by the likes of Jim Allister. You know, to call the idea of Northern Ireland being a customs union, the capture of Northern Ireland with EU, it's up there with what the Prime Minister and other half-bred tears are calling the Benn Act, the Surrender Act. And my point is, apart from one's views on where we are with the Brexit negotiations, that we should be really careful, particularly public representatives like Jim, in the language we use. So I think this is really a difficult issue. but it's certainly not made any easier by the use of that inflammatory and anxiety-provoking language, which is making this issue even worse than it actually already is.
Jim Allister?
I think it's accurate language. The Benn Bill is a surrender bill. If Northern Ireland was left marooned in the, effectively, de facto, in the EU customs union and single market, then we are in captivity to that, unlike the rest of the United Kingdom, with no escape
route. Do you not see any issue
and I don't
how dangerous that language is?
The language may point up things that the caller doesn't like, but that's the reality of it. And I think it's perfectly appropriate language, descriptive of how it would be. And it would be utterly disrespectful of the integrity of the United Kingdom to say that one part is to be cut off, abandoned into the EU orbit, where the rest can go its own way in the rest
of the world. Let's let John reply.
That is utterly disingenuous and inflammatory. That's the point I'm making. We can fulsomely disagree about many issues in politics, but we need to be very careful in the words we use, because this is a violent language that's been used, surrender, wartime. That's the point I'm making, Jim. You have every right to profess your views, but the language, I think, particularly the public representative, needs to be really carefully calibrated, and I'm just really concerned at the language being used by some people in this debate. I think is very violent, very warlike, and makes me very anxious.
I'm sorry, when you say I'm entitled to express a view and then object to the view I express...
No, it's the way you express it, Jim, is what I'm getting at. There's a language that you can use.
Well, I'll use the language I think appropriate, and I think the language...
Okay, and then you're going to take the consequences then of when this becomes much more difficult now to resolve, and
I don't know,
more divisive.
That's some sort of threat or whatever it is, but I'll use
the
language that I think appropriate.
Well, I'm not using threatening language, Jim. You're the one that's using wartime language.
Wartime language. I'm using descriptive language
surrender,
of the situation
capture.
That would result. Yes, it is a surrender. The Benn Bill
is a surrender. That is warlike language.
It says to Brussels, you can screw the United Kingdom over as much as you like, because we've tied Boris Johnson's hands. We will force him to surrender. That's exactly what the Benn Act is about.
Okay, John, thank you very much. Jim Allister, before you go this morning, can I ask for your reaction to what was front page of the Irish edition of the Sunday Times yesterday? You may have seen this. It was
No, I didn't.
Well, it was an article. Let me just give you the context for it. This was an article suggesting that there is... the headline was Loyalist Plot Action if Boris Shafts the North. It was written by John Mooney. There was a quote within it: "We'll see how hard the border is if bombs start going off." Jonathan Powell has been reacting to this as well, one of the architects of the Good Friday Agreement. Do you get any sense that there could be significant unrest in Northern Ireland if Boris Johnson's proposals go through? Significant unrest from the Loyalist community? Or is this being whipped up by a selective few?
Well, at this moment, it's hard to judge. I don't see that there is, at this particular moment in time, an appetite for anything like that in any quarter. But I suppose if the betrayal was huge enough, it would provoke some sort of reaction. But, you know, I am aware of the reaction to that story. But I'm equally aware that the reaction from most quarters to that story contrasts with those people's silence on the suggestion that if you dare to have a border at the international boundary of the United Kingdom, that you'll have terrorism from Republicans. That seems to be okay with some. All terrorism is wrong, no matter where it comes. But those who are going apoplectic about what was in that newspaper report, I think, should equally be looking at themselves and asking themselves, did they promote their political agenda by trying to suggest there would be some sort of terrorist reaction to a border on the island of Ireland? If they did that, then they should be more respectful.
Well, it's the assessment of the PSNI that there would be trouble at the border from dissidents, for example.
Well, I think the Chief Constable was very foolish in talking up a terrorist violence threat, because then that in some way validates the very cause that they're trying to espouse in defeating the United Kingdom leaving the EU as one nation. And I think if a Chief Constable thinks it appropriate to talk up the threat of violence from those who don't want the United Kingdom.
He's not talking anything up. He's giving an assessment, which he was asked to do.
And I've told him that face to face.
Jonathan Paul said the following. This is 10 hours ago on Twitter. He said, now the UVF are making threats if there's a hard border in the Irish Sea to complement the dissident Republican threats if there's a border between North and South. What have the Brexiteers opened up?
Well, that's just an attempt at being a smart aleck comment from Mr. Powell, of course, who still hasn't got over the fact that he lost the referendum. And that's where much of this goes back to. Those who have been prepared to hide behind terrorist threats on the border do so because they haven't got over the fact they lost a democratic vote.
That's absolutely obscene, Jim, for you to be even speaking in that in those terms. More people than you stood up against violence in border areas throughout the Troubles. So you don't get a carte blanche now to label everybody the same. I'm sorry.
I don't understand your comment. I'm simply saying that those that talked about Brexit as being something that would introduce terrorism on the border were talking up a scenario which then they were prepared to hide behind in order to defeat Brexit. That's the reality.
Let's let Tom Kelly respond.
The reality is, and as someone who served on the policing board at great personal risk to myself and other people who were not supporting the police, the reality is I take the security advice of the Chief Constable. I take the security advice from the people who have to man the border, who have to keep us safe and to keep law and order. And the reality is, for people who allegedly support law and order, to dismiss completely the Chief Constable as a fool, or to ignore his advice, or several Chief Constables' advice, it hasn't just been one. The reality is, that's what the information that we've been told, that the dissidents are likely to exploit a hardline Brexit situation. But my main point, Stephen, is very simple.
So we set our agenda according to terrorism?
No, we don't. We set our agenda according to the... sorry, Jim, let me speak. We set our agenda according to the August 2016 letter sent to the Prime Minister by Arlene Foster and Martin McGuinness, basically setting out the special circumstances in Northern Ireland to get a soft Brexit on this border. Because remember, the Good Friday Agreement is about accepting the status quo in Northern Ireland, and the status quo is keeping what we have, preserving what we have, preserving economic prosperity.
The Belfast Agreement has got nothing to do with the border. It doesn't say anything against the border. It doesn't say anything against tariffs.
Okay.
But of course,
it says a lot about trade. One of the bodies is actually a trade body, an All-Ireland trade
body. It's a trade body between two separate jurisdictions with different trade rules.
It's an All-Ireland trade body.
Yeah, but the Belfast Agreement says nothing that there shouldn't be a border. It says nothing that there shouldn't be tariffs. And yet those who are peddling against Brexit constantly pretend...
Okay, final word to Tom Kelly.
The Good Friday Agreement says everything about the border because it has set up cross-border institutions to allow us to facilitate ease of trade, ease of business, ease of freedom of movement of people, shared facilities for GP and health services. The Good Friday Agreement at its heart is about a borderless Ireland.
Okay, we're going to leave it there. Tom Kelly, Jim Allister, thank you very much.